when I published Ulysses by James Joyce in my little bookshop called Shakespeare and Company in Paris.
Look, look, the dusk is growing. My branches lost in the song.
Stately plump buck mulligan.
All perfume, yes, and his heart was going like mad. And yes, I said yes, I will, yes.
Friends of Shakespeare and Company, read Ulysses by James Joyce. Read today by Jeanette Winterson. You, Cochrane, what city sent for him?
Tarentum, sir.
Very good. Well? There was a battle, sir.
Very good.
Where? The boy's blank face asked the blank window. Fabled by the daughters of memory. And yet it was in some way, if not as memory fabled it. A phrase, then, of impatience, thud of Blake's wings of excess. I hear the ruin of all space, shattered glass and toppling masonry, and time one livid final flame. What's left us then? I forgot the place, sir. 279 BC. Asculum, Stephen said, glancing at the name and date in the gore-scarred book. Yes, sir. And he said, another victory like that, and we are done for. That phrase the world had remembered, a dull ease of the mind. From a hill above a corpse-strewn plain, a general speaking to his officers leaned upon his spear. Any general to any officers, they lend ear. You, Armstrong, Stephen said. What? Was the end of Pyrrhus? End of Pyrrhus, sir. I know, sir. Ask me, Common said. Wait, you, Armstrong. Do you know anything about Pyrrhus? A bag of fig rolls lay snugly in Armstrong's satchel. He curled them between his palms at whiles and swallowed them softly. Crumbs adhered to the tissue of his lips. A sweetened boy's breath. Well-off people, proud that their eldest son was in the navy. Vico Road, Dorky. Pyrrhus, sir? Pyrrhus, a peer. All laughed, mirthless, high, malicious laughter. Armstrong looked round at his classmates, silly glee in profile. In a moment, they will laugh more loudly, aware of my lack of rule and of the fees their papas pay. Tell me now, Stephen said, poking the boy's shoulder with the book. What is a peer? A peer, sir, Armstrong said. A thing out in the waves, a kind of bridge. Kingstown Pier, sir. Some laughed again, mirthless, but with meaning. Two in the back bench whispered. Yes, they knew. Had never learned nor ever been innocent. All. With envy, he watched their faces. Edith, Ethel, Gertie, Lily. Their likes. Their breaths, too, sweetened with tea and jam. Their bracelets tittering in the struggle. Kingstown Pier, Stephen said. Yes, a disappointed bridge. The words troubled their gaze. How, sir? Common asked. A bridge is across a river. for Haynes's chapbook. No one here to hear. Tonight, deftly amid wild drink and talk, to pierce the polished mail of his mind. What then? A jester at the court of his master, indulged and disesteemed, winning a clement master's praise. Why had they chosen all that part? Not wholly for the smooth caress. For them, too, history was a tale like any other too often heard. Their land, a pawn shop. Had Pyrrhus not fallen by a beldam's hand in Argos, or Julius Caesar not been knifed to death? They are not to be thought away. Time has branded them, and fettered they are lodged in the room of the infinite possibilities they have ousted. But can those have been possible, seeing that they never were? Or was that only possible which came to pass? Weave, weaver of the wind. Tell us a story, sir. Oh, do, sir, a ghost story. Where do you begin in this? Stephen asked, opening another book. Weep no more, Cummin said. Go on then, Talbot. And the history, sir, after, Stephen said. Go on, Talbot. A swarthy boy opened a book and propped it nimbly under the breastwork of his satchel. He recited jerks of verse with odd glances at the text. Weep no more, woeful shepherd. Weep no more, Felicidas, your sorrow is not dead. Sunk though he be beneath the watery floor. It must be movement then, an actuality of the possible as possible. Aristotle's phrase formed itself within the gabbled verses and floated out into the studious silence of the library of St. Genevieve, where he had read, sheltered from the sin of Paris night by night. By his elbow, a delicate Siamese conned a handbook of strategy. Fed and feeding brains around me, under glow lamps, impaled with faintly beating feelers. And in my mind's darkness, a sloth of the underworld, reluctant, shy of brightness, shifting her dragon's scaly folds. Thought is the thought of thought. Tranquil brightness. The soul is, in a manner, all that is. The soul is the form of forms. Tranquility, sudden, vast, candescent, form of forms. Talbot repeated. Through the dear might of him that walked the waves, through the dear might. Turn over, Stephen said quietly. I don't see anything. What, sir? Talbot asked simply, bending forward. His hand turned the page over. He leaned back and went on again, having just remembered of him that walked the waves. Here, also, over these craven hearts, his shadow lies. And on the scoffer's heart and lips, and on mine, it lies upon their eager faces, who offered him a coin of the tribute. To Caesar, what is Caesar's? To God, what is God's? A long look from dark eyes, a riddling sentence to be woven and woven on the church's looms. Aye. Riddle me, Randy Roe, my father gave me seeds to sow. Talbot slid his closed book into his satchel. Have I heard all? Stephen asked. Yes, sir. Hockey at 10, sir. Off day, sir. Thursday. Who can answer a riddle? Stephen asked. They bundled their books away, pencils clacking, pages rustling. crowding together. They strapped and buckled their satchels, all gabbling gaily. A riddle, sir? Oh, ask me, sir. Oh, ask me, sir. A hard one, sir.
This is the riddle, Stephen said. The cock crew, the sky was blue, the bells in heaven were striking 11. 'Tis time for this poor soul to go to heaven.
What is that? What, sir? Again, sir? We didn't hear.
Their eyes grew bigger as the lines were repeated. After a silence, Cochrane said,
What is it, sir? We give it up.
Stephen, his throat itching, answered, The fox burying his grandmother under a holly bush. He stood up and gave a shout of nervous laughter, to which their cries echoed dismay.
A stick struck the door, and a voice in the corridor called, Hockey!
They broke asunder, sliding out of their benches, leaping them. Quickly they were gone, and from the lumber room came the rattle of sticks and clamour of their boots and tongs. Sergeant, who alone had lingered, came forward slowly, showing an open copybook. His tangled hair and scraggy neck gave witness of unreadiness, and through his misty glasses, weak eyes looked up, pleading. On his cheek, dull and bloodless, a soft stain of ink lay, date-shaped, recent and damp as a snail's bed. He held out his copybook. The word sums was written on the headline. Beneath were sloping figures, and at the foot a crooked signature with blind loops and a blot. Cyril Sargent, his name and seal.
Mr. Deasy told me to write them all out again, he said, and show them to you, sir.
Stephen touched the edges of the book. Futility.
Do you understand how to do them now? He asked.
Numbers 11 to 15, Sergeant answered.
Mr. Deasy said I was to copy them off the board, sir.
Can you do them yourself? Stephen asked.
No, sir.
Ugly and futile. Lean neck and tangled hair and a stain of ink, a snail's bed. Yet someone had loved him, borne him in her arms and in her heart. But for her, the race of the world would have trampled him underfoot, a squashed, boneless snail. She had loved his weak, watery blood drained from her own. Was that then real? The only true thing in life? His mother's prostrate body, the fiery Columbanus in holy zeal bestrode. She was no more. The trembling skeleton of a twig burnt in the fire, an odour of rosewood and wetted ashes. She had saved him from being trampled underfoot and had gone, scarcely having been, a poor soul gone to heaven. And on a heath beneath winking stars, a fox, red reek of rapine in his fur, with merciless bright eyes, scraped in the earth, listened, scraped up the earth, listened, scraped and scraped. Sitting at his side, Stephen solved out the problem. He proves, by algebra, that Shakespeare's ghost is Hamlet's grandfather. Sergeant peered askance through his slanted glasses.
Hockey sticks rattled in the lumber room, the hollow knock of a ball and calls from the field.
Across the page, the symbols moved in grave Morris, in the mummery of their letters, wearing quaint caps of squares and cubes. Give hands, traverse, bow to partner.
So,
imps of fancy of the moors. Gone, too, from the world, Averroes and Moses Maimonides, dark men in mien and movement, flashing in their mocking mirrors the obscure soul of the world, a darkness shining in brightness which brightness could not comprehend. Do you understand now? Can you work the second for yourself? Yes, sir. In long, shady strokes, Sergeant copied the data. Waiting always for a word of help, his hand moved faithfully the unsteady symbols, a faint hue of shame flickering behind his dull skin. Amor matris, subjective and objective genitive. With her weak blood and whey-sour milk, she had fed him and hid from sight of others his swaddling bands. Like him was I, these sloping shoulders, this gracelessness. My childhood bends beside me. Too far for me to lay a hand there once or lightly. Mine is far, and his secret as our eyes. Secrets, silent, stony, sit in the dark palaces of both our hearts. Secrets weary of their tyranny, tyrants willing to be dethroned. It's very simple, Stephen said as he stood up. Yes, sir, thanks, Sergeant answered. He dried the page with a sheet of thin blotting paper and carried his copybook back to his desk. You better go and get your stick and go out to the others, Stephen said as he followed towards the door the boy's graceless form. Yes, sir. In the corridor his name was heard, called from the playfield. Sergeant! Run on, Stephen said. Mr. Daisy is calling you. He stood in the porch and watched the laggard hurry towards the scrappy field where sharp voices were in strife. They were sorted in teams, and Mr. Deasy came stepping over wisps of grass with gaitered feet. When he had reached the schoolhouse, voices again contending called to him. He turned his angry white moustache. What is it now? He cried, continually, without listening. Cochrane and Halliday are on the same side, sir, Stephen cried. Will you wait in my study for a moment, Mr. Deasy said, till I restore order here. And as he stepped fussily back across the field, his old man's voice cried sternly, What is the matter? What is it now? Their sharp voices cried about him on all sides. Their many forms closed round him, the garish sunshine bleaching the honey of his ill-dyed head.